Good morning, everyone, or good afternoon, almost. I'd like to start by presenting some of the background to the research. The research was supported through a center of study, through the Center for the Study of Health Disparities at Texas A&M and Indiana University, and through some intramural funding. And I'd like to point out the following who made this research possible. One of them is one of our speakers today. Here's some members from the Center for the Study of Health Disparities. I think it's really important to make sure that all of us, I think the statement that was made at the beginning, we're all here because of others, makes a very important point. And this research wouldn't be possible without the help and work, hard work for this, without the Center for the Study of Health Disparities. The outline of my study essentially starts off, I'm gonna go through the importance of it, some of the background, some of the origins of where the study came from, the guiding framework behind it, the methodology I used and the team used, and finish with some results and conclusions. Why is this important? African-American men are about 1.5 times more likely to die from cancer than white men. African-American men have 7.1 years less life expectancy than white men. African-Americans develop hypertension earlier than whites and are less likely to receive treatment. In 2004, the rate of African-American males being diagnosed with AIDS was 8 times greater than for white men. African-American men also had the highest age-adjusted all-cause mortality rate of any race group in the United States. Clearly, there is a significant importance to this study. I'd like to present two quotes that pretty much highlight the background for this work. Social forces of racism and discrimination coupled with the economic disadvantages have worked against the health of black men for centuries, thus reflecting a long-term history. When figures on black crime, teenage pregnancy, female-headed families, and welfare dependency are released to the public without sufficient explanation, racial stereotypes are reinforced. This quote points out that without background, without context, simple description isn't enough, doesn't suffice, and doesn't tell the whole story. Research to date. Some of the criticisms we point out a deficit model. Outcome-based results looking at rates, incidence, and prevalence of diseases like HIV, STIs, cancer, and et cetera. And they focus primarily on these focus groups, care-based studies out of hospitals and HMOs. As a result, there's been limited program development in the community, and these studies also reiterate the known social determinants. While it's important to know where the factors are and what the factors are, we're quite aware of it now with the subsequent amount of research out there. What we do know, behaviors and culture are linked. To understand behavior, one must examine the context behind that behavior, and we also know that behavior is related to the social environment. African-American men have a unique and shared cultural legacy. This is something that needs to be enforced and reinforced. Oppression, resilience, masculinity, and context shape this culture. Again, looking at what shapes behavior. Wellness behaviors among African-American men may be related to this culture. That's the context. What we don't know. A.J. Franklin wrote a book, From Brotherhood to Manhood. His research stems from a clinical experience of over 20 years of working with African-American men, and this emphasizes the importance of integrating not only clinical work, but research work. And we use this work to help us identify where brotherhood or the brotherhood originates. We come to understand what's happening in the community by what happens to us in the community, Dr. Franklin says. I believe that the brotherhood at its best is a viable gateway to authentic visibility and empowerment. This suggests a great deal, and we will talk about it more further. Oh, it didn't show up. So the guiding framework here is the PEN 3 model. Unfortunately, it's not displayed here. It's not coming up. But there are three large overlapping groups, one being relationships and expectations, another being cultural empowerment, and the final being cultural identity. The importance of this framework, unfortunately, as I said, it's not up here, is the importance of culture. A lot of work to date hasn't really emphasized the importance of culture on behavior. When we look at behavior, a lot of our research, a lot of the research today, doesn't really look at the impact of family and community on that specific behavior. This arrived or came from Aaron Bua's idea that, well, while studying HIV in Africa, that culture played a great role, a significant role, in the development of individual behaviors related to HIV and AIDS. Primarily, and it would be easier to show this, there's an assessment tool and an application tool with this model. The purpose of the study is to explore the nature of the Brotherhood and describe how the Brotherhood relates to African American men. The research questions of the study: what characterizes the Brotherhood? How does the Brotherhood relate to wellness? And how can the Brotherhood be used to develop health interventions in the future? Liedrick will be talking a little bit more about that specifically later in the talk today. This study was conducted in four phases. There was a beginning. It emerged from a discussion at Indiana University. There were five interviews done, and there was also a focus group study. The Brotherhood conceptualization, what it looks like now, what we have come to call the Brotherhood study, started at Texas A&M from the discussions and the work previously done at Indiana. And it was implemented in Texas, as I showed at the beginning of the presentation. And the analysis was done by two different sets of research groups, myself and a research group in Texas. All aspects of the study were coordinated in Texas, managed and implemented by this research team that I pointed out at the beginning of the study. It was a qualitative semi-structured interview design. The population was a convenient sample of 20 African American men, two per school. We'd use two schools in Texas, ages 18 to 35. And I'll talk a little bit more about, Liedrick will talk a little bit more about the data collection and recruitment. Instrument development, we'd use two separate instruments. One was a demographic profile, simply to understand the background of our participants. Another was a semi-structured interview, which is the heart of the study, which was 34 questions. And there were six domains to these questions: the Brotherhood itself, beyond personal relationships, help seeking, experiences with the help with the help system, patient-provider communication, and participation in research. Content validity for the study, for the instruments, was determined through three different processes. One, the exploratory study that I mentioned at Indiana University. Another was a subsequent focus group study that was also conducted at Indiana University. And finally, we sent the director of our center, provided me with names of four experts in the field of African American men and health. We sent them the instrument for review. We received the review back and made changes to the instrument as needed. The thematic analysis of the transcripts was done by me and the group in Texas using three different methodologies, or three different theoretical frameworks. There were six steps. We spent a great deal of time transcribing all of the data from the interviews themselves, writing notes called theoretical and personal notes to each of the transcripts, open coding, identifying meaningful themes in the data, developing categories, linking these through integrative memos and a summary of the memos. And then finally, using a method of triangulation, essentially communicating with the group in Texas, we discussed the findings and their subsequent meaning. What we found, some of the results: sample profile, 65% self-identify as both African American and Black, 15 used or identified primarily as Black, 45% of our sample was freshmen, 30 sophomores, 20 juniors and seniors, and one graduate student. We had 21 enrolled through, Liedrick will talk a little bit more about this in a minute. We ended up with 20, one at a rural HBCU in Texas, another at an urban HBCU in Texas. The households that where they came from were 60% from a single parent home, 70% being raised by their mother. This could mean a variety of things. We can talk about that maybe later. 70% grew up in a household with two or more adults over the age of 18. There's a lot of history to this question, and there's a lot of explanation that goes well beyond the scope of this discussion. I give three examples of what the analysis looked like. We have the question, one of the domains, we have some of the answers, and we came up with categories that reflect the answers by the participants. Another example, from experiences with the health system, here's the question, here are some of the answers provided, and here's how we arranged, or how I, rather, arranged the data. And the last example, from our participation in research, the question, the answers, and how we arranged the data. Keep in mind, the final step of the findings was to integrate these findings into a meaningful manner. Characteristics of the Brotherhood. System of beliefs and values and social construct that guide the wellness behaviors. It involves a high level of social awareness and consciousness. That seems very clear. There is also, these participants were informed by a high level of history and perspective. And learning through observation also came out in the findings. From the nature of Brotherhood, one of the most important things that came out, or that came out time and time again, was this concept of keeping each other on their toes. In another way, we looked at this idea of social ridicule, or what I term as social ridicule, as a means of saving face. One participant says, I really don't make decisions for them. I'm just there to support them and help them realize the consequences of their action. Another participant described, well, if a friend of mine is going to jump, and I'm not going to tell him not to jump, I may tell him not to jump, but when he lands and finds out that he's got broken legs, I may stand there and say, see, look, that probably wasn't a good idea. This is the sort of sentiment that is reflected in this. Image as a means of identity, daily stressors, suspicion, mistrust, skepticism as coping behavior. These are all findings from the study. And most importantly, I think, for what we found, the learning through observation and learning from others' mistakes and successes. We have noteworthy findings that I think are very important, but they don't fall under the specific research questions that we asked at the beginning, or that I asked at the beginning. Some of the social codes that seem to emerge from the Brotherhood, or from our discussion of Brotherhood, are reflected here on the left. The importance of these social codes, or the value of these codes, transcends a great deal of the struggle that was reflected in the stories given by these participants. The challenges, the trust that they share among each other is dictated by, or seems to be dictated by, these codes. It also provides motivation, and there is some essential strength in the group. And it is the study is in depth, and I think there's just not enough time really to talk about it, but there seems to be a lot of evidence suggesting that behaviors are improved with the group as opposed to improved with the individual. We have some conclusions. The Brotherhood does shape group behaviors, and therefore, we believe, has the potential to change individual behaviors. So through the group, we can change individual level behaviors. We believe that Brotherhood supports the socialization of African American men, and it guides African American men through their lived experiences in some way. And it is a connection that is implicit among members, all members of the Brotherhood. Some of the lessons I learned as a researcher can be explained essentially in the challenges of collaboration and the importance of forming alliances. It's important also to understand the challenges to ethnographic research. I was unable to be in Texas because I live in San Diego. Clearly doing in-depth, real, on-the-ground work requires being there, being on the ground, and you can't fake it. So there is a massive disassociation between intention versus action. And if you are going to start on this road doing work like this, it's great to have the intention, it's great to have the motivation, but you need to be able to supply or direct your life towards that end. This is not easy. These are challenges, these are life choices. These are difficult, difficult choices. And anytime you're doing the types of research like this, transparency is essential. And I also have three final things to say, but the last, rules of engagement. You gotta know, you have to know where you stand, especially me being white and stepping into a culture that is clearly not my own and somehow dictating or saying, I know what's wrong, listen to me, wait, I have the answer, or I have a way of having you think about it. For me, it was very difficult to step back. It was very difficult to separate the emotion from the science. We have, and I'll end with the implications. there's a lot of implications to this. So when it gets published, hopefully, you can certainly read it and find out more about it. So what? Diederik is going to talk a little bit more about why this matters, and I will end with that and just leave it with the acknowledgments. Thank you.